ओम ज्ञान तिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकय चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। हरे कृष्णा। वी आर ऑन द सेकंड डे ऑफ आवर सेमिनार ऑन यमुना देवी, Goddess Yamuna, who is one of the most beautiful ornaments for the holy land of Vrindavan. Yesterday we were speaking about how Yamuna is so important for us as devotees of Krishna, particularly for devotees who are attached to especially the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. She has a very, very important role to play, as we saw yesterday. And we quoted from Srila Prabhupada's passages, his purports, and his translations of the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita to establish that right from the beginning of the Lord's appearance in Vrajabhumi, Yamuna Devi had an important role to play. And all through Krishna's stay here in Vrindavan, Yamuna Devi participated actively in all of Krishna's pastimes. She wasn't simply a spectator, but she was an active participant and a facilitator of many of Krishna's wonderful pastimes here. And therefore, as Jiva Goswami has said, and we quoted Srila Prabhupada's purports in which he quotes further Jiva Goswami as saying that the Yamuna is considered more sacred than the Ganga. Although there is no difference in the waters of the Ganga and the Yamuna, both are transcendental, nevertheless, when the waters of the Ganga are sanctified 100 times, then they become the water of the Yamuna. This is Jiva Goswami's conclusion, quoting from the different Puranas. And therefore, Prabhupada, quoting Jiva Goswami in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, explains that King Parikshit actually sat down in his last 7 days of his life on the banks of the Yamuna and not on the banks of the Ganga, as is popularly believed. Yesterday we also tried to see through the eyes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. For us who are Gaudiya Vaishnavas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is all in all. He is the one who reveals, who has revealed to the world what is Vrindavan, who are Radha and Krishna, and what are the pastimes of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. Without Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Prabhupada explains in his preface to the Nectar of Instruction, it is not possible to understand Krishna and Vrindavan. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's perspective on Yamuna was something we discussed yesterday by briefly narrating certain episodes from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So absorbed was Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Krishna's Vrindavan Leela that whenever he saw a body of water, be it a lake, a pond, the sea or a river, he thought that was Yamuna. And on many occasions he would just jump into it. He would jump into that body of water and thinking that he would be witnessing the Jalakeli or the water pastimes that Sri Chaitanya that Sri Krishna had here with the gopis in Vrindavan. In this way for us, Yamuna plays a very, very important role. We also mentioned that serving the Yamuna by glorifying her, having her darshan, worshipping her, bathing in her, these are all acts of devotional service. they come under sadhana bhakti for us as practicing devotees, under the limb pada sevanam, which is one of the 9 limbs of devotional service as outlined by Prahlad Maharaj. So today we'll speak about how Yamuna, or rather what Yamuna is in the spiritual world, what is her actual identity, and also how she descends into the material realm, that is into our world over here. Actually, when Radha and Krishna perform pastimes in the spiritual world, they are not alone. They are always accompanied by so many associates. That is what makes all these pastimes so sublime. It's no fun to be alone. Even Krishna doesn't like to be alone, even though he is Atmaram, completely self-satisfied. Therefore, Eko Bahusyam, he expands himself unlimitedly. He has so many associates in the spiritual world with whom he performs his transcendental, blissful pastimes. So he expands himself, and then some of these expansions, who are his associates, also further expand themselves in order to further nourish and facilitate Krishna's loving pastimes. Now we all know that Srimati Radharani is Krishna's foremost devotee by far. And she is assisted by principally the 8 Sakhis or the Gopis led by Lalita Devi and Vishakha Devi. Now, these associates also further expand. So Vishakha Devi expands herself among other personalities as Viraja Devi. And Viraja Devi manifests herself as Yamuna. And as Yamuna, then she flows not only through Goloka Vrindavan, but also she passes through the spiritual world and descends into this material world. In other words, when we speak of Yamuna Devi, we are actually speaking of Vishakha Devi, the gopi associate of Srimati Radharani and Krishna. So we'll talk more about that a little later. Now, all these personalities have been existing from time immemorial, eternally, in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, time does exist, but not in the way that we understand it here. In this world, in the material world, time is present in the form of its degrading or degenerating influence. But in the spiritual world, time acts in an inconceivable way to sweeten and nourish Krishna's pastimes. And it also confounds our ordinary material intelligence. When we say that everything is eternal in the spiritual world, and then we speak about a pastime in which something or someone manifests. So by our ordinary intelligence, we think, well, that should have happened at some point in time. But the fact is that both are true. Inconceivably, by Krishna's arrangement, Yamuna Devi, Govardhan, etc. manifested at some point in time, and still they are eternal. They are eternally existing in the spiritual world. One time, again time, because we are so accustomed to time. So one time, it was time for Krishna to come down to the material world because he had to deliver all the conditioned souls. So then he asked Srimati Radharani that you must also descend with me because I cannot go alone. So Srimati Radharani was reluctant. This is a narration from the Garga Samhita. And she said, unless the forests of Vrindavan are there, unless Govardhan Hill is there, and unless the Yamuna River is there, I will not descend into this world, into the material world. So then, at her request, of course, Krishna would not have thought of coming here without these associates. So then he took out, again the word taking out, not in the way that we understand in this world, 84 square miles of territory from Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world, and transported the entire abode here in the material world. Srila Prabhupada mentions, he uses the word facsimile, that this Vrindavan in which we happen to be sitting at this moment is not different from the Vrindavan in the spiritual world. It is a facsimile. We are used to the word fax. You fax some paper, you get an exact copy. So this Vrindavan is the same as the Vrindavan there, fully equipped with Yamuna, Govardhan, the forests, the kunjas, the associates, everything and everyone is here. So Yamuna also is here. Nevertheless, just like Govardhan manifested at some point in time within the material world, we don't know when, it's inconceivable. Similarly, Yamuna also manifested. This is again described in the Garga Samhita. The pastime after Sananda describes to Nanda Maharaj, and this whole pastime is narrated by Narad Muni in the Garga Samhita. When Nanda Maharaj asks Sanandan, please tell me, how did Govardhan manifest in this world? How did Yamuna Devi manifest in this world? And then he goes on to describe this narration about Govardhan manifesting, which we will not discuss now. And then he comes to the topic of Yamuna. Now we will take a brief detour before coming back to the Garga Samhita. We will go to the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. It is mentioned that one time Srimati Radharani was sitting, waiting for Sri Krishna to come, but he was late. When he did not come, she became concerned, and she got information that Sri Krishna was sitting with another gopi, Viraja, in some kunja. So she became enraged, and she rushed there. Very intelligently, Krishna had posted his friend Sridhama at the gate to Viraja's kunja garden to stop any unauthorized people from entering. So when Srimati Radharani came there, then Sridhama stopped her from going in, and she demanded to see Viraja. Krishna didn't come out, but Viraja came out, and being very angry, Srimati Radharani cursed Viraja that you will become a river, and further that you will appear in the material world. And then she left in a huff. Meanwhile, Viraja returned to Krishna, and she was there with Krishna in the kunja when the seven sons of Viraja started creating a commotion. So Viraja became a little annoyed, and she cursed the seven sons that may you be born in the material world, and you will not meet with each other when you are there till the time of dissolution. You will become bodies of water, and no one will be able to drink from you. So as a result of that curse, they became the seven oceans around the seven islands in the universe. Now, there are many such cursing pastimes that we see, even the pastimes that have to do with the advent of Tulasi and Shaligram into this world. They can be a little bewildering because there's so much of cursing and counter-cursing, but we should know that these are simply transcendental means by which Krishna induces his associates to appear within this material world to help him when he descends here. They are all meant ultimately to help Krishna fulfill his purposes in the material world, which are, number one, to save the conditioned souls who are trapped in the cycle of birth and death, to attract all of them back to him in the spiritual world. And the associates also help Krishna to let the conditioned souls become attracted to Krishna rather than to this world. So in any case, meanwhile, now after receiving this curse from Srimati Radharani, Viraja Devi became frightened. But Krishna pacified her and told her, well, it's time for you to go to the material world as per Srimati Radharani's curse, but don't worry. I will be always close to you and I will accept you as one of my wives when I descend very shortly into the material world. So Viraja Devi was somewhat relieved to hear that, and then she manifested as a river. And now we come back to the Garga Samhita. And then Yamuna, now Viraja had manifested as Yamuna, she started flowing. It is mentioned that the Viraja river and the spiritual Ganga both merged in her waters. So when Yamuna started flowing, first of all she had to break through with great force of her waters through the Viraja. And then she was joined by the Ganga, who came from another part of Goloka Vrindavan, which is Navadvip. And Ganga joined her. Ganga was on her way also to the material world to deliver the conditioned souls. So they met. So Viraja, Ganga and Yamuna all flowed together as one river. They went all through the Vaikuntha planets and then came to the material universes. And then followed the famous pastime of Lord Vamanadeva coming here, when he, in the process of delivering Bali Maharaj, he lifted his lotus leg, his foot. With the first step he covered the higher planets, with the second step he covered the entire universe, and the toe of his left lotus foot pierced the coverings of the universe. And as his toe pierced the coverings, the waters of the Ganga, Yamuna, the Viraja, which were together as one river, they flowed into the universe. Just a few drops, actually, it is mentioned, a few drops, but those few drops were enough to cause a torrential downpour in the material world. They are not drops as we understand it. They are drops from the point of view of the spiritual world. And then they were held for 1,000 celestial years on the head of Lord Shiva. At least as far as the Ganga is concerned, but Yamuna, Ganga were all together. And now we'll come again to the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll intermingle all these different narrations. In the fifth canto it is explained that as Ganga, and now we know that Ganga is mixed with Yamuna also, as the waters of the Ganga flowed in through the hole in the universe, eventually they came down to Dhruva Loka, which is the topmost planet in the universe. It is actually the residence of the Supreme Lord himself. When Dhruva Maharaj performed penances, he wanted a kingdom that was greater than the kingdom of his grandfather. But where could such a kingdom be obtained in the material world? So the Lord had no other option but to give him his own abode. And then that planet became named after Dhruva, and it is called Dhruva Loka. Dhruva Loka is a planet that can be seen today. If you look in the northern direction, it is due north. And the elevation from the horizon is the latitude of the place at which you are standing. So let's say Vrindavan, I don't know how much is the latitude of Vrindavan, maybe 20 degrees or 25 degrees perhaps north. Then if you look due north and 20-25 degrees up, you will see the Dhruva Tara, the Dhruva Loka there. Dhruva Maharaj is still there. After enjoying 36,000 years unrivaled supremacy in the material world, as ordained by Krishna, then he was transferred to Dhruva Loka, where he still lives, even today. So the waters, Dhruva Maharaj bears the waters of the Ganga and Yamuna as they descend into the material world upon his head, and then the waters flow down. Dhruva Maharaj understands the glories of the Yamuna and the Ganga. So he always wets his hair with that and bears this water on his head. Having flown from Dhruva Loka, the waters of the Yamuna and Ganga then flow on to the next lower level of planetary systems, which is the Saptarshi Loka, the planets of the seven sages. Actually speaking, if you look up at the sky, you will see the Dhruva Loka, the pole star. In English it's called the pole star or the north star. And touching the north star is the little bear, and a little further away is the big bear, for those of you who are familiar with some constellations. And the big bear is nothing but the Saptarshi, the constellation of the seven sages. So according to the Srimad Bhagavatam cosmology, below Dhruva Loka are the planets of the seven sages. So the waters of the Yamuna and Ganga flowed from Dhruva Loka to the Saptarshi Loka. From there, they were carried, the Saptarshi, seven sages also bore the water on their heads. And then in billions of celestial airplanes, the Bhagavatam explains, these waters were transported to the planets of the demigods. Firstly to the Chandra Loka, the moon planet. And then from there to Brahma Loka, the planet of Lord Brahma. Brahma's planet is situated on the Sumeru mountain, Mount Meru, which is a very famous mountain in the universe. So in this most extraordinary way, these waters were transported down. Just imagine billions of celestial airplanes transporting the water, as the Bhagavatam says. So in any case, they started flowing down from Brahma Loka down the Sumeru mountain in four different directions, forming four different streams. The stream that flowed south headed towards Bharat Varsha. And remember now that the Ganga and Yamuna are still together. And as they came here, they came to the Himalaya mountains. At that time, the Ganga and the Yamuna separated. The Ganga went to Mount Himavat, or the Himalaya. And Yamuna went to Mount Kalinda. So, Ganga therefore is called the daughter of the Himalayas. And because she appears from there and then flows into the plains before going on to the sea. Yamuna, on the other hand, when she appears in Bharat Varsha, she comes through Mount Kalinda. And therefore her name is Kalindi, the famous name of Yamuna. And then she begins to flow down. And the place at which she actually appears, just as Ganga appears from Gangotri, they are all fed by different glaciers. The Yamuna begins from Yamunotri. We had the good fortune of visiting Yamunotri just a month ago before coming here to Vrindavan in a group of devotees. It is a very, very spiritually surcharged place. Something very extraordinary, an experience in itself. that I'm sure every devotee would like to have. It is a very difficult journey. You have to go right up into the mountains. And just a few months ago, there had been terrible landslides. As it is, the roads that lead up to Yamunotri, which is at 10,500 feet above sea level, the roads are very narrow. And beyond the roads is a sheer cliff that goes down thousands of feet. A little miss and your bus would be down there into the Yamuna, a shortcut to the Yamuna River. And with the landslides, everything was very stony. The walls from the hill, the slopes of the hills were shaky. And we were quite worried because there were so many devotees going in so many buses. You know, we were praying to Yamuna Devi to please protect all the devotees so that no untoward incident would happen. Fortunately, all through the journey, everything went well. Not one devotee was injured in any way. So in any case, the roads are also very narrow. And sometimes when another vehicle comes from the opposite direction, it can get quite anxious. Because then you have to reverse and then the other one will squeeze in through. But still, thousands of vehicles go. Thousands of pilgrims. This is faith. Despite all the risks, it's really astonishing to see the large number of people who go there with so much devotion and faith, even when it's cold. Generally, Yamunotri is open from the time of Akshaya Tritiya, which is the hottest period of the year, to Deepavali, Diwali. And most of the pilgrims go in the earlier part, that is when it's summer. So it is extremely crowded at that time. But later on, our trip was towards the end of the period, just before Kartik. So there were few people, but it was quite cold. And remember, in those areas, there is no heating. So we went up to Yamunotri. There's a place called Janaki Chatti. You have to reach there. And somehow, we had to travel by night for a few hours because of some obstacles that came in the way. And it was definitely a test of nerves for many devotees. Because in the dark, you can't even see clearly. And in one sense, it was good it was dark because the devotees couldn't see. Had they seen, perhaps they would have been terrified. And some devotees who did see, who were awake, when they came in trembling. But anyway, I don't want to scare you or discourage you. Actually, I'd rather encourage you to go to Yamunotri sometime. Because Yamuna is so dear to our hearts. And here there is no Yamuna anyway. I'll come to that point a little later. So, once you reach a place called Janaki Chatti, then that's the last place where you have some ashrams or some guest houses and hotels and so on. You have to park your vehicles there, and to go to Yamunotri, you have to climb 6 kilometers. Now those 6 kilometers are as good as walking 150 kilometers on a flat land. Because it's quite at an elevation, so there's less oxygen, and then the slopes are very steep, but it is worth it. Because we are going to see Mother Yamuna, and all along the climb there is Mother Yamuna down there flowing. And you have darshan of Yamuna all the way. Crystal clear waters of the Yamuna as she flows down to the different streams that come together and join the Yamuna. It is a heavenly sight. An unforgettable experience. Being there all through for those 3 hours it takes to climb those 6 kilometers. Of course, there are many ponies and palanquin carriers and whatnot to assist those who can't climb. But our devotees experienced that it was safer to climb because the horses had this very unnerving tendency to go towards the edge of the cliff every time. And many times the devotees would get so anxious, even after having paid the man for the horse, they would get down and walk anyway. better to bear the discomfort of walking. But when you are with devotees, the discomfort doesn't really appear so much because everyone is chanting. And actually you will remember the verse we chanted yesterday from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chidananda Bhano Sadananda Suno, which we chanted here. So for most of the time we were chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Then for some time we would chant this Chidananda Bhano verse because Mahaprabhu chanted it. And then again Maha Mantra, again this verse and again the Maha Mantra. In this way, in Yamuna consciousness, we went all the way up to the top. We reached there after 2 or 3 hours perhaps. And there were others for whom it took much longer. There is a beautiful temple of Yamuna Devi right there on the top. The deity of Yamuna is said to be 5,000 years old. And there is a village across the Yamuna from Janaki Chetty called Kharsali. So the pandas of those of that village actually look after the administration and worship of that temple. So they also have to climb 6 kilometers up and down every day. What to speak of them? All these palanquin carriers, they carry you on the shoulder. Imagine it's hard enough to walk. And 3 of them put you on a palanquin and carry you up, and they walk very quickly. And they sometimes do 2 trips, and in high season they do 3 trips a day, up and down, because they are born and raised there. So for them, they are accustomed to that life, and they are very hardy, tough and hardy. So they can go up and down. And there Yamuna Devi, we can sit and see as she flows down. The water is extremely cold, of course. Very difficult to take a bath. It's like an electric current. When you touch the water, it is so cold. Just about freezing. And surprisingly, as it happens in many of these Himalayan places, like even Badrinath and so on, there are many hot springs that come from the earth. And part of the reason it is said is that the god of fire, Agni, comes to perform austerities at these places. And therefore, the Lord blesses him and says, all right, you do your austerities, you will get the fruits of your austerities provided you provide some comfort to the pilgrims who come here. So then, by Agni Dev's mercy, we have hot springs that come out from Mother Earth. And it is so hot, you can't touch the water. And you have many such hot springs. The most famous one there at Yamunotri is called Surya Kund. And in this kund, it is like just a small opening, like a small well. And customarily, what pilgrims do is, they take some raw rice, wrap it in a piece of cloth, and dip it into the water and keep it there for a while, and the rice is cooked. And then you take it back as prasadam. So you'll see hundreds and thousands of pilgrims all getting the rice cooked and then taking it back. You can cook your potatoes, you can cook anything you like. Just dip it there and within a short time it's cooked. And because it's so hot and you can't take a bath there, so what's done is there's another kund called the Jamuna Bai Kund, where the waters of the Yamuna are also diverted and the waters of the hot springs from Tapta Kund are diverted. So all in all, you have a huge sauna bath there. And it's a favorite spot for all the pilgrims who go. And when we went there also, we did not feel like coming out. We were all there in this nice hot pond. Outside was chilling cold, and inside it was warm water, and everybody was just blissful. The mood, and everyone was shouting the glories of Yamuna Devi and chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Even the other pilgrims who came who were not ISKCON devotees, they also got carried away and so much affected by this whole mood of being in the presence of, in the shelter of Yamuna Devi. Actually, you can feel the shelter and the presence of Yamuna. You can feel that you are practically there at her lotus feet. So nearby also there are other places where many, many pastimes were performed. Yamaraj also came here to perform penances. The sage Asita had an ashram here many years in the early days, early ages. The Chaitanya Bhagavat mentions that Nityananda Prabhu visited Yamunotri. Although there is no mention of Mahaprabhu coming this far up north, Mahaprabhu came only up to Vraj and then he went back. But Nityananda Prabhu, from the time he left home at the age of 12 till he joined Mahaprabhu in Navadvip, there was a 20-year gap there. And he also went up to Yamunotri. So then we were following in the footsteps of Nityananda Prabhu. We went. It was a very, very nice experience. And the waters of the Yamuna are so refreshing. And we see there in the hills the way, the simple life that the people lead, and they have such staunch faith in Yamuna. It is so inspiring. We are some of the people living there. Because the only money they make is in the 6 months when the pilgrims come. The other 6 months the roads are closed and it snows and there is ice everywhere. So I was talking to them and asked them, what do you do for a livelihood in the other 6 months? They said, we earn what we can in these 6 months and that takes us through for the other 6 months. And I said, how do you live? It's so cold in your village. And so he said, well, we manage. Then when I saw their houses, they didn't even have toilets. So I asked, well, I'm sorry to ask such a mundane question, but what do you do about your toilet? Especially in the winter, when it's ice and snow everywhere. He said, we go out, but we have to heat our water in our lota. But by the time we go there, the water freezes. And then I asked them, well, what if someone falls sick? What about medical facilities? There's one doctor we met there who was quite devoted. He wanted to serve all the devotees. And he's doing some seva to all the pilgrims. He doesn't charge poor people there, the devotees who come. But the local people, because of so many pilgrims, have become a little wealthy. So I asked them, what do you do about medical facilities if somebody falls sick? So they replied, if somebody falls sick, that means Yamuna Maya wants them to be sick. If Yamuna Maya wants them to be cured, they'll be cured. If Goddess Yamuna wants to take them away, she will take them away. They were so matter of fact and detached about the whole thing. So it was so inspiring to see the faith they have with Yamuna. Their life revolves around Yamuna. They are in total Yamuna consciousness. So anyway, that was a nice trip. So that is Yamunotri. So the Yamuna comes over there and from there she starts flowing down. Near Yamunotri is a place called Bandar Poonch. In Hindi, Bandar means monkey and Poonch means tail. It is said that after Hanuman, burnt Lanka, Ravana had set Hanuman's tail on fire. After Hanuman had submitted himself for capture, having burnt Lanka, so Ravana had his tail burnt. And after that, after Hanuman had burnt Lanka, he came here near Yamunotri. And he dipped his tail in the Yamuna to extinguish the flames and get some relief. So that place is called Bandar Poonch. So then the Yamuna flows down there and then she goes further down. It is a heavenly sight, the waters flowing down. Actually, there is a lot said in the scriptures about such water. The waters that flow down from the hills and dash against the rocks is said to be the purest water, even materially speaking. And Yamuna in any case is not ordinary water. Her waters are Chidananda Bhano, right, as we saw yesterday, transcendental waters. So not only are the waters of the Yamuna in those regions transcendental, that is spiritually pure, but they are also materially very pure. So then as they flow down from the hills, the waters come down and eventually into the plains, they pass through the Khandava forest, which is near present-day Kurukshetra. Then they come via Indraprastha near modern-day Delhi. And then they come, then the Yamuna flows towards Vrajabhumi. And as she comes to Vrajabhumi, she recognizes, oh, here is my home. And then she begins to flow very slowly as she comes to Vishram Ghat. And then having come to Vrajamandal, now she goes very slowly meandering around the different pastime places of Radha and Krishna and all their associates. Govardhan, Nandagram, Barsana, she flows all around them in different routes. We'll discuss some of these places tomorrow, the pastimes that took place at many of these places. And then she begins to flow downwards, southwards rather. And as she moves on, then at Prayag, modern-day Allahabad, she meets the Ganga again. That is a Triveni Sangam, where the three rivers Ganga, Yamuna and Saraswati meet. And then they join together again and move towards the ocean. Once they come into the ocean, then they have to part ways again. Ganga and Yamuna are very close to each other. They are very good friends, devotee friends. And they love each other's association. And when the time comes for them to separate, so then they are not really happy at all. And then Yamuna, she has to go back to Goloka Vrindavan, whereas Ganga has been given the service of going down to the lower planets to purify the residents there. Ganga, as you know, is called Mandakini in the higher planets, Ganga on the earthly planet, and Bhogavati in the lower planets. So then Yamuna addresses Ganga and said, O goddess, you are the purifier of the three worlds. You have arisen from the lotus feet of the Lord and therefore you are completely transcendental. All the three worlds constantly sing of your glories. Unfortunately, I have to separate from you now. I will miss your association. I have to go back to Goloka. There is nothing in this existence that can purify somebody of all sinful reactions like your waters can. Now at this moment, as I part ways from you, please forgive me if I have committed any offenses against your lotus feet. So the two rivers are manifesting perfect Vaishnava behavior. And then Goddess Ganga replies, my obeisances unto you, O Goddess Yamuna. Actually, it is you who are the purifier of the three worlds, because you are more intimately connected to Krishna than I am. You actually arise from the left side of Krishna's body. You are actually the very life force of Krishna. Anyone who is in contact with you also becomes qualified to gain entrance into the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. Actually, all the residents of Goloka Vrindavan worship you. You are worshipable even for them. What to speak of the other residents of this material world? Now, O dear goddess, by the order of the Supreme Lord, I have to go to Patala Loka to purify the residents of those planets. But I am fearing greatly the separation from you, and I am longing for the time when I will meet you again in Goloka Vrindavan. I also beg at your lotus feet to forgive me for whatever offenses I may have committed. And then there is a tearful parting of ways. And then Ganga goes on to Patala Loka through the ocean. And Yamuna also goes through the oceans. And then from the saltwater ocean, which is our ocean on the planet Earth, then she goes into the other oceans, the seven oceans. And then through the golden mountain, which is called the Loka Loka mountain in the Srimad Bhagavatam, then she moves upwards now. Because she is a transcendental river, so she can easily move up. In Sanskrit, the word for river, one of the words or synonyms, is Nimnagaha. Nimnagaha means one who flows downwards. But here, because Yamuna is transcendental, so she can flow upwards as well. Now she is on her return journey back to the spiritual world. So then she goes all the way up through the seven oceans, passes by all the planets, and as she rises, the residents of the higher planets shower flowers and glorify her. She passes through the coverings of the universe, goes through all the Vaikuntha Loka planets, bypasses them, and then comes to Goloka Vrindavan and takes shelter once again at the lotus feet of Sri Krishna and Srimati Radharani. So Yamuna has this complete circuitous route that she takes. So she is existing even now as she flows. She manifests actually not only as a river, water, but she also manifests in a human-like form. She is known here not only as Kalindi because she is the daughter of the Kalinda mountain, but she is also known as Bhanuputri or Mitraputri or Suryaputri. Bhanu, Mitra, Surya are names for the sun. So she is known as the daughter of the sun god, Vivasvan. In the Srimad Bhagavatam we hear that Vivasvan has two queens. One is Samnya and the other is Chaya. From Chaya, Suryadev or Vivasvan gave birth to Shani. Those who know astrology fear him very much. If you don't know anything about astrology, well then wonderful. You don't have to worry. In any case, as devotees, we don't worry so much about Shani and Rahu and Ketu and so on. We just worry about chanting better our Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And that's sufficient for us. So anyway, one of Suryadev's sons is Shani. And through Samya, then he had twins called Yama and Yami. Manu is also one son of Suryadev. We hear from Bhagavad Gita, Imam Vivasvate Yogam Proktavan Aham Avyayam Vivasvan Manave Prahar Manur Ikshvakave Bravit. So Krishna says, I instructed the Bhagavad Gita to the sun god Vivasvan, who instructed to his son Manu, who is the currently presiding Manu called Vaivasvata Manu, the seventh Manu in this day of Brahma. So, in any case, he has twins, Suryadev, called Yama and Yami. Yama is none other than Yamaraj, the Lord of Death. And Yami is none other than Yamuna, the goddess Yamuna. Now, Suryadev, as we can well imagine, is extremely bright and effulgent. So glaring is his effulgence that his wife Samya was having a hard time even looking at him when he would approach her. So one time when Suryadev approached her, she closed her eyes because she couldn't bear the glare of his effulgence. And Vivasvan became a little annoyed. And he said, your son will be the one who will tie everybody down to the world of death. And then Samya was very morose. Oh, what a curse that my son will be like that. And anyway, then Vivasvan felt sorry for having said such a thing. Then he said, all right, but then you will have a daughter who will undo that. And she will relieve everyone from the cycle of birth and death Those who take bath in her waters will become free from the cycle of birth and death. Now Yamaraj and Yamuna both are great Vaishnavas. Yamaraj is also a Mahajan, one of the 12 Mahajans mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in whose footsteps one is expected to follow. But they have such contrary duties and services to the Supreme Lord. It's a hard service cut out for Yamaraj. Very difficult. Yamaraj appears to be a cruel tyrant who simply subjects everyone to suffering and sends them to hell and gives them the due results of their karma. It's not that Yamaraj feels great pleasure, but he is doing it as a service to his Lord and Master, the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. Similarly, it is Yamuna's service to liberate the conditioned souls, the devotees of Krishna. So in this way, even though they have very wonderful relationships with each other, Yamaraj and Yamuna, but their duties appear to be contradictory. Although ultimately, they are one in purpose, because the ultimate goal is to bring everyone to Krishna's lotus feet. So Yamaraj also came to Yamunotri to perform penance. And that is where he blessed his sister. Actually, because Yamaraj was pleased with her, he asked her for a boon. And then she also begged that, you know, your job is to tie everyone to birth and death. My request to you is to please liberate them. So then Yamaraj replied, well, those faithful people who come here to Yamunotri to bathe in your waters, or those who bathe anywhere in your waters, even at other places, they will be exempt from the touch of my associates. I will not touch them. In this way, Yamuna and Yamaraj both have this wonderful role to play here. Both of them are darkish in complexion. Yamuna Devi is dark, her waters are dark, and as I mentioned yesterday, therefore she is called Krishna, the long A, as is Draupadi, because she is also dark complexioned. And the reason for the dark complexion is interesting. I just discovered it a couple of days ago. In the Vamana Purana, there is a little episode. After the whole turmoil at Daksha's sacrificial scene, when Sati burnt her own body up because she was upset with her father at having insulted Lord Shiva, who was her husband, then Shiva was outraged and enraged. And somehow or the other, to pacify him, Kamadev started shooting his fiery arrows. Cupid started firing his arrows at Lord Shiva. And it became dark and he jumped into the waters of the Yamuna, and that is how the waters of the Yamuna became black. That is a narration from the Vamana Purana. In any case, even though Yamuna and Yamaraj are blackish, but they have personalities who are the golden counterparts. The golden formed counterpart of Yamaraj is called Dharmaraj. And the golden formed counterpart of Yamuna is Vishakha Devi. So she appears here, as we know, along with Srimati Radharani when Krishna manifests in Vrindavan. Now when Yamuna appeared as the daughter of Surya Dev, Vivaswan, she had a very strong desire to marry only Krishna. Now incidentally, since we are talking about the sun god, we might mention that the Srimad Bhagavatam mentions that there are actually 12 sun gods. Each of them preside for a month. And Vivaswan is one of the 12 sun gods. And Yamuna is his daughter. So she had such a staunch determination to marry Krishna and nobody but Krishna. And Vivaswan initially tried to dissuade her and told her, look, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can you marry the Supreme Lord? But she was firm in her resolve. She would marry nobody else but Krishna. So then Vivaswan relented and he said, all right, so what would you like me to do? She said, I will go and perform austerities and please Krishna so that he will marry me. So then Vivaswan built a nice palace for his daughter Yamuna within her waters. And she lived there. And she continued to live there even till the time of Krishna's appearance. Even when Krishna was performing his Vrindavan and Mathura Leela, she remained in the palace within her waters. But when she went to Dwarka and Krishna's Dwarka Leela and Hastinapur Leela unfolded, one time, and this is narrated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna and Arjuna decided to go to the Khandava forest. Of course, we mentioned that briefly when we were doing some lectures here about the Mahabharata and Krishna's role in that. So Krishna and Arjuna went to the Khandava forest, which is near present-day Kurukshetra. And as they were walking along, suddenly they saw this most beautiful young lady who was strolling nearby. And Krishna told Arjuna, please find out who is this very beautiful and charming lady. So Arjuna, on behalf of Krishna, walked up to the lady and said, oh my dear goddess, please tell me your identity. Are you a demigoddess who has descended from the heavenly planets? Or who is your father? And what is your purpose in strolling unattended, unaccompanied by anyone on the banks of this river? Now Yamuna immediately understood that this was Arjuna. And she knew that Arjuna was a great devotee of Krishna. And being a great devotee herself, she understood that the way to the Supreme Lord's heart is through his devotees. So she petitioned Arjuna to please act on her behalf. She said, please put in a word on my behalf to Krishna that I want to surrender at his lotus feet. So he should be kind enough, have mercy on me and accept me. I know that you are Arjuna, the dear friend and devotee of Krishna. And when the devotees want something, the Lord will fulfill. So then Arjuna said, very good. So he went back to Krishna and conveyed the message that this was none other than Kalindi or Yamuna, the daughter of Vivaswan, who had a palace built by Vivaswan here within the waters. And then Krishna happily accepted Kalindi. He immediately, without any further ado, put her on his chariot, took her to Dwarka and married her nicely there. So Kalindi is also one of the queens of Krishna in Dwarka. So back to your Krishna book. Remember the names of all the queens of Krishna in Dwarka? Yes, there is Rukmini, there is Jambavati, there is Satyabhama, there is Mitravinda, there is Lakshmana, there is Satya, and there is also Kalindi. So the Kalindi, who is one of the queens of Krishna in Dwarka, was actually the Kalindi or the Yamuna River. So in this way, Krishna fulfilled the promise that he had given to Viraja before she left Goloka in the spiritual world to come here. She had promised and said, "They don't worry, I will always be close to you and I will accept you as one of my wives." And Krishna did indeed do that. So Yamuna has a role to play, not just in Vraj, but also in Dwarka, also in the Kurukshetra Leela, because she flows right by Kurukshetra in the Khandava forest and passed in the Prastha. Unfortunately today, the condition of the Yamuna, especially after New Delhi, is lamentable and pathetic. Some Vrajavasis, including many devotees from ISKCON, have been very, very concerned that most of the water that flows down from the Yamuna, sometime before it reaches Delhi, is diverted. And it is used either for industrial purposes or for drinking water to be provided to the residents of Delhi city. And therefore, there is hardly any water that remains to flow down. And what flows down then are the industrial effluents and the sewage from Delhi. And it is only in the monsoon months, actually, when the dam overflows, that they release some water from the Yamuna and then that flows down here past Braj. A few days ago I read a report that the Central Pollution Board of India had also come to the conclusion, and they told the Supreme Court that this indeed is the case. It vindicated the stand that many devotees had taken about this. So it is indeed a very difficult predicament, and there is much to be done about this. Of course, fundamentally we should pray very strongly and chant very strongly to the lotus feet of Yamuna Devi that she may once again appear as she did before. And in whatever way, at a practical level, that we can offer help, we can try to offer help, so that one day her waters will begin to flow past here in Vrindavan as she did before, not just in the monsoons as she does now. So tomorrow we are going to talk about the different holy places, the ghats, particularly on the bank of the Yamuna, and the pastimes that took place. And we will also sing the famous Yamunashtakam of Srila Rupa Goswami, a very wonderful glorification. Yes, anyone whose phone rings should be punished. It's a rule. So this will be our program for tomorrow. We will start at 5 o'clock in the evening. So thank you very much. It is time, it is 6:30. We will meet tomorrow for further glorification of Goddess Yamuna. Yamuna Devi ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Shyama Sundar ki jai. Shri Krishna Balaram ki jai. Shri Shri Gaurnitai ki jai. Shri Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Hare Krishna.